Been having some crazy storms.
Hey everybody, thank you so much. Take two of here's Michael Donnellan. He's really here this time. This isn't Jason, this is Michael. You want to How you doing, Mike? It's good to see you,
Great
man.
to
Thanks for
see
showing up.
you, Dan. How are you, my friend?
Doing well, yourself?
Good. Surviving this storm here in Andalusia. It's been Man, it's been the worst. You know, we're known here for having good weather. This is Mediterranean climate. It's not that different to sort of California weather usually. And the last couple years, we got hit with a few storms. This has been by far the worst. Been absolutely
Wow.
terrible. So normally I would be calling you from my studio, but my studio is attached to our beach house, and so it's constantly going on and off with the electricity.
Wow.
So I'm in the apartment here in town where it's a little bit more stable. I hope you can hear me well.
Yeah, I can hear you good. Thanks.
Good, good, good.
Yeah, I'm glad you're safe and your family and stuff, obviously. You do. I imagine you would have said, Dan can't make it. Sorry. So, yeah.
It's been nuts. No, I wasn't gonna, because last week when we were gonna go, when we were gonna do this, I got really sick. You can still hear it a little bit in my, I'm a bit nasally, but
Yeah, it happens.
man, it's been one thing. I'm such a tropical blooded person. I just can't do the cold. It
Oh
fucks me up, man.
man, you'd hate it up here. We've had crazy weather
Oh.
this year. It's been a lot less snow, but
You're in
we
Washington State, where are you?
yep, up in Washington
Washington
State.
State.
And we had part of the highways over near the coast washed out completely. Like there's one road, it's still not back together, and I doubt it will be for another 2 or 3 months. They were saying that in November. They just for, and it's brutal. There's like the town of Leavenworth, which some people are in the chat will probably even know of, even if they're not from Washington. It's kind of famous for Christmas lights and having being like a little Christmas village out in the middle of
Oh yeah.
the pine forest. Yeah, it's a
That's
tourist
cute.
Christmas town that you can't get to
Yeah.
this Christmas because the
Oh,
highway's
no.
literally half of it's in the fucking river.
Dude, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, what happened to the global warming catastrophe? I'd like some global warming. Can we
Hopefully we get
please?
some next year. Yeah, the climate science is a lot more complicated, I think, than they make it out to be a lot of the times. It's
Agreed. 100% agreed.
when I talked to the one dude for the whole Flint Dibble fiasco, I talked to one climate scientist and had an hour long Zoom call with him that he asked me not to record. But one of the things that he said was that there's people in his field that are venerable and that have a lot of influence that are like hell-bent on fighting against pseudoscience and because and they're he says he didn't go as far as to say they falsified data, but he said that at times he feels that they cross lines. And so, you know.
Do you know it's really interesting? And I mean, I feel the same way with whenever you're doing something that is in any way grounded in science, you obviously have to use the scientific method. The way we do our research is if there's a method available or technology available, we use it. But now and again, it's still not perfect, you know, in terms of like you opened this comment up by saying, I don't think climate change is quite as cut and dry as we have been suggested. And I completely agree. I look, here's how I feel. As humans, should we be responsible and when, you know, not littering and, you know, filling the rivers full of petroleum and this and that and smoke in the air. Yes, sure, we should be more considerate. Do I also believe that climate change is something real? Well, it's absolutely always going to be real. The earth goes and comes and goes up and down in climactic cycles forever. And do I really think we've had that much? It's obvious the whole climate change in terms of like global warming, that's fucking rubbish. I'm sorry, but the climate that we've been having is ever since I was a kid, we had hot summers and some not so hot summers. We had cold winters and some not cold winters. Is it that different than when I was a kid? I don't really think we could argue that spray cans and cow farts have have been changing the climate. It's an interesting one. It's an interesting. I'll leave it at that. I don't want to offend any.
You're fine. I know that we now have a the little community notes button right down below here. So you guys want to just click right here. There's a little thing you can just see. It's not there yet, Michael. But everybody who watches after this is done being live, they'll YouTube will certainly have a little climate science link there. And you know,
it's interesting stuff. Take, for example, the methodologies, the sciences that we have for dating things. Even those aren't perfect, you know. The carbon 14, famous one, obviously. You know, up to a point, I remember reading this article where they had done a test on to see how old a seal, you know, the animal that lives in the ocean, And they had done a test, a carbon 14 dating test on a seal. It turned out to be 1,100 years old. Only problem was that it was still alive. another one, the same article, they did a test on some roadside grass that was growing along the side of the freeway. And again, the readings were absurd. It was like 3,000 years or something, you know. Because so it really it's all about how accurate. It's a question of it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one.
The thing that everybody always ends up talking about, and it's you know, no matter what you feel about climate science, there's really no question that it's a very polarized, vitriolic field. The people involved, there was, I want to say it was the late 80s that letter came out that was like a letter to a media outlet from a scientist asking them not to publish certain data because it would encourage, I can't recall the exact things. And and it's been a hot minute since I heard this, but don't quote me on it. If you look it up and I'm crazy, that I apologize. I could have got facts mixed up here or something, but it seems like this was a thing that I heard years ago. And, you know, the thing, and we saw a similar kind of thing to the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis, the big debunking paper on that had like 200 names attached to it and half the names don't matter. We saw the same thing with that with climate science, where there was a bunch of teachers and shit just signing off on it, that people that they didn't have degrees in anything relevant. And it was the same way with this. I mean, I don't really give two shits what an archaeologist has to say, a seed specialist. What the fuck does he have to say about an asteroid hitting the Earth or not? I mean, come on now.
1,000%. It's an interesting point that you bring up, and an extremely valid one right now. It's 2026. You mentioned just now, I mean, there are archaeologists that I've worked with and that I do work with and that I've met and whatnot, whose entire career, for example, has been the specialization of, or maybe their thesis or their main field of focus of study was of a riverway in this vicinity near here, right? So maybe that's what they're really good at. They wrote the paper on it. Hats off, good for them. I've got a friend of mine, and she's a very bright archaeologist, and her specialty are megalithic dolmen, these dolmen structures, which are really fascinating. I can't wait to talk to you more about some new work we've done there. And she's very much textbook. You talk to her about dolmen, she'll go on for hours, you know, quoting her own work and as well as quoting the work of her predecessors and whatnot. But when I first met her, you would say, you know, what are your thoughts on subjects like Atlantis? And she would go, Atlantis. and yet, well, now she doesn't think so. Now she's very interested in the subject because of all the work that we've been doing. And yet you ask her about other types of archaeological specialty fields, and she know about as much as you or I about it, you know. So archaeology is very much dependent on the person. And in 2026, we are living in a moment that's so unusual for us as researchers, because we have at our disposal things that just a handful of years ago weren't available, and now they are.
That's right.
Between the all the gizmos and gadgets and this and that, satellites and drones that we use, and the detectors and scanning, subaquatic hydrographic scanning technologies and LIDAR, not to mention advancements in other sciences that suddenly come along that help us out. This is really an exciting moment. And back to the storm, even though I hate the stormy weather and all that, this last week, I don't know if you got a chance to have a look. I have had the most amazing chance. Opportunities have been arising because of this storm. This storm, we're on the front line here in Andalusia. We're on for the ground zero for any kind of storm coming from the Atlantic, right? Okay. Winds and storms, and my house on the beach is 100 meters from the water. And I was at my neighbor's house last night when you said to me, hey man, we're on in a minute. And I said, that. Shit, man. No, I was like, shit, is it Thursday? And I go, no, it's Wednesday. But I got confused too, because I was supposed to have a podcast yesterday. But no, I'm at my buddy's house, and his house is right on the cliff edge. And just last night, it ate away, the ocean ate away, just in one night, a meter and a half.
Holy shit.
Unbelievable. Proper fear, right?
Yeah.
However, having said that, last weekend, like 5 days ago, on Sunday and last Friday, I was out in the storm with my friends filming some of these things that are appearing from the sedimentary bedrock, ancient ruins. You got to see it. I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Nuts.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. I answer just a couple of quick questions here in the chat. Michael didn't show up yesterday, as you might have just heard there. Cripple Rick, he realized that I realized that I screwed up. What's up, fam? Mama, it's good to see you. Nothing much. We see what we're doing here. Where's Michael streaming from? He's streaming from Spain. It's not the same as Mars, but it's similar. In fact, it wasn't involved in World War II. So
it's funny, because even though it wasn't involved in World War II, it was
very much part of that whole Franco. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah. And we've got right where I was filming along this beachfront 5 days ago. We're filming these crazy things. We're filming an ancient well. A well that was obviously not on the beach when it was built. It was, you know, there were a couple hundred meters or more land that has been since eaten away. There was a bunker from Franco's time about to collapse on any month now. It's going to collapse onto the beach. And then there were elephant bones, bro. Elephant bones. Elephant yeah. bones that have now been taken to the University of Huelva for study. And there's the third, there are three layers, sedimentary layers in big chunks, sort of a meter of sort of a coarse sand stone, the sand above it. And then there's a very pretty layer of almost a green turquoise clay. And then where there was the beach, the sand from the beach, that's been washed away. And the deepest layer is this clay-like material, dark clay-like material. And it's been dated to 10,000 years ago. And in that dirt, I'm going to send you images, we have filmed rectangular cut marks, straight lines that look like those, you know, the cartwheel marks in Malta. Mm-hmm. Just exactly the same.
Interesting.
It's unbelievable. Just yeah. appeared this week, thanks to the storm.
That's really awesome. It'll be it's always interesting to see those kinds of things happen. Around here, we're really limited on how we can handle those things because of Native American rights. Like, at least up here in Washington, with if I like when I was poking around to make a video I made a few months ago, there was a Native American burial site, according to the records that I was looking at. But and I walked right up to it. It's right on the water. I walked around it. I could have dug for clams and excavated the fuck out of that thing, because there's no protection on it. It's right off the goddamn road. That same kind of thing where it's like, I could do that, but then doing what I do, you know, the proper thing to do is to notify the tribe and notify the authorities, the archaeologists and stuff. This is one of those situations where I have spoken to a couple of people about it, but I haven't gone all the way up the ladder yet, because, you know, the thing is, when, as you probably have seen, when you say certain things, there's to a large chunk of the world, you say things like, just to say Atlantis, and it's like, you may as well have said flat earth, you may as well have said, Alex Jones is right about everything, and the skinwalkers hiding out at the government. So you always end up dealing with this kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's always okay. Frustrating, but the fact of the matter is, I kind of prove them wrong in that regards by not going to excavate the place to begin with, right? I mean, that's what they expect us to do, is just run out there. Oh, I know there's an elongated skull in that sand. But going and taking pictures, no, that's beautiful. That's brilliant.
Everything we do, when I first started on this project 10 years ago, 2016, February was the first time we came out here. 2018 to 2019, we took a year off, and things really kicked off 2019 when I ultimately moved here. But I didn't wake up one more. I'm a fairly level-headed guy. I mean, I studied archaeology at the American University of Greece and the College of Greece in Athens. So in that regard, I am an academic. But I never really, first of all, it's not like I woke up one day going, I'm going to go look for Atlantis. In fact, I didn't really know all the details of Atlantis until, and this brings me back to going in and just digging anywhere, when I first started working with our team here, because later on I ended up moving to LA and I got a job at 20th Century Fox, and I worked in film and worked there for years and years and years. So archaeology always remained just a passion on the side, really. I did, however, always remain connected to groups, and that's how I met the group I work with now, and things come around and whatnot. But the reason I'm saying this is, one of the big things that we're very good about is bureaucracy. Every country in which we've identified or recovered some kind of a discovery, I still have this gnarly cough, man. We always do our due diligence. We always make sure people know that our work is non-invasive. The moment that we do work with, because every country's got its own laws, you know, and you got to be very careful about how you handle it, as to do things right. And different countries have different. There's the treasure laws of in England that are different from those in, if you find a galleon or a shipwreck in Spain, it's different. We always follow those rules. In the event that we do find something very interesting, we're lucky because we have locally here, we got a bunch of archaeologists that we forward our work to. And that way it keeps it all official and everybody can be happy and
That's awesome. That's perfect. I hope to get some sort of situation going like that up here, but I know that I've got some haters that, like, I know that Flint's gone out of his way to scorch the earth around me. I watched him, that climate scientist that I was talking about a few minutes ago, I watched him on Twitter. I watched Flint go and lie about me to that guy in order to, like, get so... Yeah, you know, there it is.
You know, our friend, he's a terrific guy, Brian Dobbs. He did a brilliant documentary that's out right now on Mars. He was at the Cosmic Summit with us. As I was watching that, there was one really interesting line that one of the And you have to forgive me because I'm kind of new in this circle. You
No,
know,
you're fine.
having met
You're
you
fine.
at the Cosmic Summit was just terrific, and you and a great deal of other people there were really, it was a terrific, fun experience for me. But sometimes you mention certain names and I'm not quite sure who's who. But in Brian's documentary, Planet, the Red Planet Blue or something like that, I think it's called. But anyway, there's an interview with a super charismatic astrophysicist, an elderly chap. And he makes a very true statement. He says something to the effect of being an academic, being a professor of whatever in whatever field, you would think that these academics would get along and hug and shake hands. And he goes, oh, they'll fist fight each other. And he goes, like, literally fist fight each other. That's how it gets. So imagine somebody who isn't, doesn't, you know, because it's, what
Isn't
is
in the
it?
club, yeah.
What, it's a club, it's a cult. Even archaeologists that I know, I won't name them, because, but behind, when we're having a drink and laughing about things, they'll say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
These motherfuckers chew each other up just because of ego. And I'm not doing any of what we're doing for ego. I'm doing it because I got tired of filming shit for other people. A series of circumstances happened. My mom suddenly passed away. They were living in Europe. I grew up all over the place.
Yeah.
And I was in California. I go to Italy. She suddenly passes away the day after the day I land. I hold her hand for a couple hours and she dies. It was
I'm
terrible.
sorry
And
about
my
that.
mom and my dad has a stroke the same month. So I'm like, fucking hell. All right. Okay. Pause. Let's just, you know. And I decided to take 6 months off because I probably told you a story
You're fine.
15 times
You're just
before,
fine, man.
you know. And that was in 2015. And I went back to California just to put everything in storage and kind of just come back to Italy and decide what I was going to do with dad. Because the idea of sending my best friend to, you know, he was pushing 90 years old
Yeah.
to an old folks home, I wasn't going to do that. And that's when, in those 6 months, I started collaborating with what I'm doing now. But the first 6 months had nothing to do with Atlantis. I wasn't even a word on our. I was talking to my dear friend and colleague, Timothy Akers, who passed away of cancer
I saw
a few
that.
years ago. And he was really and truly one of my best friends. The kind of guy you talk to. You look like you could have been his relative, his brother's his younger brother. You really do. Like, you both had the big beards and the look of a philosopher.
Well, thank
And
you, Michael. I really quickly,
and
let me thank old saggy guy for gifting out the memberships. That was very nice of you, sir. Thanks. All right, carry on. I'll shave on the
That's
end.
perfect on you. Don't shave for whatever
I
you
know.
do. Do not shave that. No. So I'm looking after dad. A few months had gone by. I start getting involved with my partners, and the first projects we had were in Egypt. So we had a couple projects going on in Egypt. One which has gotten a lot of attention right now, which is the Lost Labyrinth of Egypt in Hawara. Then we were doing that was in collaboration with a Belgian chap by the name of Louis de Cordier, and my partners at Merlin Burrows, and Tim had run some scans there, and it looked very interesting, very fucking interesting. And we could talk about that later if you want. And then the next month, I'm in the water diving at a shipwreck off the coast of Yorkshire, and that's an amazing shipwreck, a very famous shipwreck that we found, and we've retrieved a bunch of stuff from that. And it's actually an American shipwreck. It's called the Bonhomme Richard, which is like the most famous galleon, practically in American history, because the captain, John Paul Jones, who the British considered a pirate, to the Americans, is considered the first admiral of the U.S. Navy. And so our first 8 months together, working together, there was no mention of anything like Atlantis. It was all singular structures, either in the water or in field, but much more down to earth. It was more, it was, it wasn't as fantastical as Atlantis. But when I figured out after a year that their techniques worked, I was really excited. Plus, for me, it was a chance to take a break now and again. Dad was improving. He was old and he had dementia and everything, but I could take a few days off. I could go for a week. I could go for 10 days. And it was like my breathing room. And it wasn't until about a year later that Timothy says to me, "Hey, so you like Southern Spain, huh?" And I said, "Yeah, fuck, I love it." He goes, "Well, I got some stuff there that you really." So that's how it started. So for me, the subject of Atlantis, and the reason I'm yappering on like this is because you said, you mentioned Atlantis to somebody, you might as well mention Flat Earth and stuff like that. If you really take your time, if anybody takes their time to read the two texts that Plato wrote, the Timaeus and the Critias, and if you know geography, you can absolutely take it for his word, take him for his word, because it's absolutely precision. Everything he writes is so precise. Everything he says is so detailed, even in these 50 pages, which you read in half an afternoon, are packed with information. Where was it? What did it look like? In the region of Gades, outside of the Straits. He obviously knew about the Americas because he says, it was a very interesting quote where he says, "In the region, the Greeks, we Greeks know as Gades, which is the province of Cadiz." Now, for the people watching today who don't know the geography of Spain too well, I'll just explain it. You've got what's called the Iberian Peninsula, which is Spain and then Portugal. You have the Straits of Heracles, also known today as the Straits of Gibraltar, which are the entrance way into from North
Mediterranean.
Africa into the Mediterranean. And even today, in antiquity, the only two places to come in and out of the Mediterranean were here and the Nile Delta. Now we have the Suez Canal, which was built a couple hundred years ago, but or whatever it was. But we know that in ancient Egyptians had actually carved artificial canals joining the Red Sea with Egypt. So if you controlled either Egypt or this part of the world, you were a god. You were a god. And, it was like all the merchandise coming in and out, you controlled it. So he tells you this very elaborate story about the sons of Poseidon, and they had these islands and they controlled all of the Mediterranean. And this story comes from these priests of Sais in you want me to yap around? Should I keep going?
Yeah, carry on. You're
Yep.
good. Yeah, go ahead.
So we recently went to Sais in Egypt to see if there were any remains of this temple. So for people who don't know the story in its entirety, I'll break it down kind of quickly. The Timaeus and the Critias, which are these two, they call them dialogues. It was a weird kind of a way that they would write in Greek times. And it was sort of like a movie script. You have this and Timaeus says this, and Critias responds like this, and Socrates says this, and Plato says this. It was sort of written in kind of an interesting way.
That was
But
very
in the
popular style in ancient Greece. That was a
it
very,
was a very
very common
popular
style
it was a
of
very common style, yeah. And
writing. Yeah,
once you get into it, it's kind of cool.
it is. It's
It's it,
like it's like listening to a radio play from our
100%.
grandparents' generation.
100%. Like Orson Welles and
There you
like
go.
and here's the interesting story. So Plato writes about this story, but it gets passed down to him because 120 or 130 years before Plato lived his great 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 relative
So
by the
long.
name of Solon. And Solon wasn't just some old fool. Solon was one of the most respected men in ancient Greece. He was the lawmaker of Athens. I mean, the guy was no buffoon.
Yeah.
And as you know, the ancient Greeks revered and loved ancient Egypt, the same way that later on the ancient Romans revered and looked at the ancient Greeks as their inspiration. So there's this lineage, the Egyptians, then the Greeks, then the Romans. And in that time, Greeks were vacationing in Egypt. It was a very, you know, people think of Egypt as this archaeological hotspot right now. They were teaching history of ancient Egypt 3,000 years ago. You know, they were so I can only assume, in the way that I've learned over the years, that 2,500 years ago, the Greeks would go to Egypt and bask in the sunlight and go to these temples and talk to these people who had these libraries, right? And the Temple of Sais was one such example. It was a sect of ancient Greek, Egyptian priests, one of the oldest. And they revered the deity, Nif, I think, N-E-I-P-H or N-E-I-F. That was one of their main goddesses. But what they were really known for was they were the gatekeepers, the holders, the guardians of ancient human knowledge. So they, in particular, they were the ones who knew all about past civilizations that had been wiped out and built up and wiped out and built up and wiped up. And Solon is over there, and they're telling him this story. They're like, you know, I can imagine they're hanging out there in these temples that we just went to see, and there's nothing left. It's the ass crack of Egypt, and the temple, unfortunately, now is all you see is, you know, maybe 20 large stones. That's it.
Let me interject you really quickly, Michael. It seems like a good spot to cut you off for a second. Had a few questions asked. One of them was basically discussing other flood myths. And as I see it, basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as I see it, you basically, you're not opposed to the other flood myths, but you basically distilled your research into just basically coming from Critias and Timaeus as the roadmap, and you've basically ignored other flood myths. Am I correct in that?
There's so many flood myths.
Yeah.
Every world mythology has a flood myth, all of them. And that we've had multiple floods, absolutely. No question about it. I'll give you an idea, just to kind of, even here where I live, they say geologists determine, because where we live, this province is right on the front line of the Atlantic Ocean. It's not protected as much as the Mediterranean is. It's right on the front line of the Atlantic. They say that every year we'll have 9 to 12 mini tsunamis that you don't even know are tsunamis, but they register as a mini tsunami. But now and again, there's a proper one. Now, I wish I could show you this right now, but if you turn on the news, if you type in YouTube and you type in Andalusia floods right now, you'll see what we're going through right now. So there are floods happening all the time. But now and again, every 600 to 1,000 years, there is a proper banger, right? And the last major tsunami that hit this coastline was in 1755, which is relatively recent. It's like a few hundred years ago. It's not that long ago. They had newspapers, right? There are articles which I've read here of local people. So this 1755 earthquake hit Lisbon, the capital city of Lisbon. Portugal is a 2-hour drive from my house. Lisbon 60,000 people die from this earthquake, triggers a set of tsunamis that make their way towards this coast and kill thousands more people here. But there's some writings in these newspapers from 1755 where people didn't know what a tsunami was, and they didn't know. And they said, we saw this weird phenomenon where the waters retreated. And when the waters retreated, we saw a city appear.
Oh, damn.
And so I now, with what we're finding under the water, I have no doubt that that's one of the discoveries that we've made and registered. Plato says at the very beginning of his texts that come from the priests of Sais, that the priests of Sais say very clearly, humanity has suffered multiple devastating cataclysms, multiple ones.
The Greeks were like children and only knew of the one.
That's exactly what he said. You Greeks are like children. You don't even know your own history.
Somebody else mentioned this in the chat as well, so I want to give him credit, but I was scrolling back to him. But yes, that was anyway. I can't. Whoever it was, you get props. Sorry, but yes, that was kind of a big deal because, like, the Egyptians seemed to have this knowledge that was just hoary with age by comparison.
Yeah. No. I think there's a massive connection. Now, the priests of Sais, one of the things that's very curious, and I have, this is the one I always lug around because this is the version, this is a recent translation of the Timaeus and Critias, but Timmy had actually written a lovely note in there for me, and so it's kind of one that I always have with me. But there are different versions which I also have. I've at the house, and each one is pretty much the same, but sometimes you find certain details that are slightly different. And in one of the versions, there's a very fascinating comment, because the priests of Sais say to Solon, you don't realize you're like children, like you just said. You Greeks are like children. You don't even know your own history. You don't realize that you have these ancestors that came from outside of the Straits of Heracles in the region we now know as Gades. I'm going to get back to that in a second. But one of the things that the priest says to him, and this is an ancient Egyptian priest, he says, they're also our ancestors. So I think that ancient European culture, I mean, to say spanning the entire, you know, we think now as, you know, Italy, France, Switzerland, Germany, you know, Spain, Greece, North Africa, all the Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco. But look at 2000 years ago, the Roman Empire, the whole map, the whole frontier was completely different. That do we still have certain remnants of like the Gauls with the French? Yes. The Saxons? Yes. But now the frontiers always get fiddled with. When the priests of Sais are telling Solon this story, you get this impression of this incredibly powerful civilization, culture. And so as not to scare people off with the word Atlantis, I've become accustomed to using ancient Atlantic culture. That's what we're finding. We're finding the remains of an ancient Atlantic culture that geologically, archaeologically fits exactly in the same context of Plato's descriptions of this ancient empire. And so the priests of Sais tell Solon, we also, this is an interesting thing. He says, we also worship Heracles. And I never knew that. When I read that, I thought, what the fuck? Wait, the ancient Egyptians revered Heracles? You know, because you think they're always into their deities and whatnot. So they were much more closely related. Now, here's something I want to add to kind of wrap up the logic here. There have been some comments from people. They go, well, you know, back in those days, people weren't navigating the the Mediterranean like they do now. They didn't. That's total rubbish. They absolutely were. There's a town right down 15-minute drive. Like, actually, it's like a 12-minute drive from my house. And it's called El Puerto de Santa María. Also here in the province of Cadiz, right? Or Cadiz, as Solon called it. And the El Puerto de Santa María used to have a different name, Portus Ministeus. It was a Greek city founded by the legendary Greek hero Ministeo, who was had just fought in the Battle of Troy, the Trojan Wars, and he was escaping here, and he was being followed, chased by a fleet of ships, and he made his way up the river. The ships that were following him kept going, and he was saved, and he and his people decided to establish a city there, which is now called the Puerto Santa Maria. What do I mean to go? Where am I going with this story? When Plato wrote this stuff 2,500 years ago, when Solon was told this stuff 2,500 years ago, the Greeks had already conquered this land. The Greeks were vacationing in southern, what we call southern Spain right now, right here where I live. They built cities here. So when Plato talks about in the Timaeus Nicritias, he gives us this description of the capital. Now, we do talk about a bunch of different places in the Mediterranean and the Atlantic. We also talk about the Americas, but what our work here is specifically focused on is the capital of this grand ancient Atlantic culture that Plato spoke of. And he spoke of it in a time where the Greeks were fully aware, not only fully aware, but they vacationed here. They had colonized Iberia. It's really fascinating.
That is really
During that
interesting.
minute. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you, people have been asking in the chat since before we even started, but I wanted to wait till we've been going for a minute. There's a lot of people that have heard you talk before that are just dying to know when Atlantic is going to come out. When, and I know it's frustrating,
Oh my God. No, no, no. It's a, it's, 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 it's the question I get the most. It's the question I get the
I
most.
figure you get it
So
all the time at this point.
I'll say it. I'll say it, because this has been the most incredibly arduous and rewarding project I've ever worked on. We have seven productions right now, but we want Atlantic up to be the first to come out because, quite frankly, even though our shipwrecks are magnificent and hugely important and they're registered, Atlantica is the real banger, right? Not only that, we are already filming season three, so this could potentially be the kind of project that is ongoing. That's how much material exists in this story. It's not like just finding one object. It's a massive undertaking. We're in distribution. Now, distribution, and I'll say this delicately because we're in the phase right now. It's a little bit like a mafia, and so for me, the most important thing has always been first to have international distribution. And when it comes to distributing this particular project and making sure that it's seen all over the world, accessible to absolutely everybody, America's the best first place to distribute because you release something in America, it'll be seen everywhere. If we release something, even you might knock on the door of, we already kind of know who it's going to come out with, so we already have an idea. I just haven't announced it quite yet, but very soon, I promise. I promise very soon we will be announced. It's a big platform. It's a big platform.
Okay, good.
I'll give
Good.
you that. I'll give you that hint. It's a big platform. It's been a long, arduous process. I'm so careful with this project because it is my baby. If at any point, I'm my hardest critic, so at any point if I make a mistake through any of our research, I'm the first person to say, Fuck, we fucked up. You know,
Yeah.
which is fine. Making mistakes is part of investigating. If you don't learn from your mistakes, you're not getting anywhere.
That's right.
But that's only about 15% or 10% of the time, which is to say, a huge percent of the time, 85% of the time, when we go out to look for something in the field or underwater, it's because we've already done a bunch of due diligence before even getting to that place.
Of course.
So when we go to a location, we know there's an object there that matches what we're looking for. Sometimes we show up and it turns out that that object that we saw with the satellites,
Wasn't what you thought it was.
it was like it's a water reservoir from 1973.
Yeah, and
You
that's
know,
going to happen, right?
that's gonna happen.
Yeah, I'm actually dealing
However,
with some of that myself with the on the coast. There's the place I went over to near Longview, Washington. There's a bunch of weird anomalous stuff over there. For one, is the highest concentration of, according to the historical records, there was one dude in the late 1700s or early 1800s who saw over 3,000 elongated skulls in one area, like one burial
some
site.
crazy shit.
And
That's some
so,
crazy shit.
and there's in that area, there's a painting of one of the locals had this painting of this weird castle thing, which normally would be like, okay, whatever. But there's the satellite imagery has a square where that castle sits on the painting. So next trip over there, me and my friend are gonna go poking around and see if there's anything there, because that spot's not Native Americans' burial ground, at least until we pop our spades in. Of course, we'll probably turn into. I'm
You
not
know
planning
what's
on digging
really,
anyway, but yeah.
you know, I gotta tell you, I've so much has happened since I last taught you. And when I last taught you, I felt like a fucking idiot
No, you're all
because,
right. You're on the
you
beach,
know
it
what I,
happens.
you know what I thought, hey, let me do. So I've got this studio at home, which I wasn't able to show you. I've got this studio. I've got all this mega great equipment. And but mostly I use all this equipment and all this stuff for when we're out filming on the field, right? But then I thought to myself, I see all these podcasts and I go, well, dude, you should make your studio look good because you have all the right kit. You have all the right equipment. Like, fucking set it up properly. And on that one day that you and I talked, I thought, hey, wouldn't it be kind of cool if I can show Dan where I live? And it didn't work out at all.
It's all right. It's all right.
Oh my God.
It's
It totally fucking rebounded.
well,
But,
once you got off your own internet and onto the public internet, then yeah, you're in God's country. Then depends on how many people are on the beach, right?
But I wanted to, you just reminded me about this, that when you were talking about the stuff in Washington that you've been noticing. This place is really pretty astonishing in terms of archaeological layers of history, because there's so many
Yeah.
dating back to prehistoric times, and it's still lived in, right? And
Wasn't the
so
first
this
Neanderthals found in Spain?
exactly. So since I talked to you, we've been filming all this stuff for season two. So season two, you know, they're short episodes. I mean, they're only season one's three is three episodes. They're about 50 minutes. It was going to be six episodes, but the first season we found the submerged city, and you've seen the people haven't seen it yet, but you've seen it, so we can talk about it. We have we, when we kept going, we were diving, we dove 50 times, 100 times, 150, and finally we said, you know, first of all, for the viewers that don't know this area, diving here is very complicated. I've been diving professionally for years. I've been a dive master since I was 17. And every place in the world has its complications when it comes to diving. This place, its complications are the currents and the visibility. Terrible visibility because we're on the straits, but also because Cadiz, the province, so you have Andalusia, Spain, like America, has its different states. And each, there's seven here, and the biggest one is Andalusia. And each state, like in America, has its counties, right? And I don't know how many of it these provinces Andalusia has, but the one I live in is the province of Cadiz, or the county of Cadiz, and the capital city of Cadiz is Cadiz Capital City. That's what it's called, which is actually on a little island. And they have registered so far, from what they know, that this, they know that the city of Cadiz is the oldest in Europa Occidental, Occidental Europe, so Western Europe. They can date it back to having been inhabited 4,500-ish years ago or more, which is to say the rest has been covered over in mud. So what Plato says also is interesting, because he says when this terrible thing happened, right around the time of the Younger Dryas period, 12,000 years ago-ish, right? The island subsided and it was covered over with massive quantities of mud, sediment, right? Making the sea there unnavigable. So you have here these layers of history dating back 10,000 years, where we have remains of elephants. Plato talks about elephants, horses, and bulls and all this stuff, which is an entirely interesting section. But he tells you that the only survivors were the poor bastards that happened to be high on high ground. This brings me back to the Neanderthal thing you were talking about. Mm-hmm. So we've been filming a sequence for in season one, we give the viewer an entire intro to this area. Imagine people who haven't been here before, and you talk about Plato a little bit. We talk about this area. Hey, look what we're finding. We show these cities that we're finding along the coastline that have never been registered before, that are fascinating to say the least. And then on the third episode, we show this scan, a multi-axis echo sounder scan with a centimetric, accurate, very detailed subaquatic hydrographic scan that we do, that gives you an accurate idea. Because imagine you're in the water as a diver, your tank will last you 45 minutes if you're lucky. I gulp my air. Every time you dive, you're kind of, you sometimes barely see a meter or two in front of you, and you see the stuff, you see these walls, you're flipping the fuck out, you know, it's nuts. But then when you get up, you know, in 45 minutes, you're going kind of slow, you know, you're kind of trickling along, you know. And so after 100, 150 dives, 200 dives, you're thinking, hey, the only, because we're trying to, with a pen and a paper, when we get on the boat, we're trying to draft out kind of an idea of what we think we saw under the water. We're like, no, we're going to have to scan it. And so when we scanned it, we saw what you saw, this concentric circular canals, the same fucking thing Plato talks about, the same measurement. Plato says the central Acropolis was X amount of stadia, and then from there to the outer ring of land was this many stadia. Effectively, the measurements add up to a couple kilometer diameter of this man-made circular island city, in the center of which was this temple of Poseidon, which, and Cleto, his wife, which made up measurement of half a stadia by one stadia, which is, you know, 184 meters by 92 meters, twice the size of the biggest temple in Greece at the time. And what we found was the same. We found the ruins of a rectangular building in the center, facing north and south, like, or aligned, oriented, geologically speaking, at 20 meters depth, which coincides with the Younger Dryas period. But back to the caves, all of these clues show that eons ago, men and women lived here. They lived here. There are, in some of the caves here in Gibraltar, because Gibraltar, even though it's now owned by the English, is in the province of Cadiz. So it's an hour drive from my house. Actually, it's like 45-minute drive from my house. There's a cave, the one you were just talking about. There's another cave we just went and visited that has human remains of jewelry, not just bones of humans,
Wow.
but actual gemstones and jewelry dating back 35,000 years.
Jeez. Wow.
So I get the impression we're putting together this story for season two. It's almost finished. And season three, we expand the search. We talk about the Azores. We talk about the Canary Islands. I have to tell you another story since I've seen you. There's so much been going on. I'm just spilling it all out, but I got to tell you this stuff. It's so fucking crazy. There's a cave in Gibraltar where they found, they have these cave paintings all over Europe, right? Well, in this cave, they found the paintings of not just one ship, but a fleet of ships. A fleet of ships with oars and sails
That's wild.
fishing in the Orca, so fishing in the middle of the ocean, which means whoever painted this, they knew about industrial scale fishing, which means if they had big boats like that, they had industry. If they had industry, they had society.
Yeah.
So it's all, I get the impression that these floods have happened many times over. The poor bastards that survive, the only way they're, imagine the Younger Dryas. We know from data that something terrible happened out of the normal ups and downs that the earth tends to have. Suddenly, you got this mini ice age, very peculiar. You've got these mammoths with fresh figs in their stomach, it's flash frozen. It's like, what the fuck happened there? It's like, and let's imagine for a second a comet hits. What is a comet? It's a frozen ice ball. You put a glass, you put an ice cube in a glass of water at room temperature, it's going to cool down for a while until eventually, after a while, it goes back to room temperature. But imagine at a global scale, and imagine that you're surviving this. You've have a view of the coastline, and all of your ancestors, all of your they're dead, and you're trying to survive with two or three other
Yeah.
humans that have survived with you. And there's imagine there's bad weather for 1,300 years, so they say. With the Younger Dryas, there's a this period of fucked up weather, right? And imagine we have hailstorms nowadays, now and again.
Or
You gotta get under a roof.
you're gonna lose a tooth at least,
You're
yeah.
gonna lose a tooth. You're gonna break a nose. Imagine storms with hail balls the size of basketballs. You're gonna want to go into a cave.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we talk about the caveman theory, I don't think cavemen were our ancestors. I think cavemen were the survivors
Okay.
who then came out of this when things started. And they're not idiots, they're humans like us, same biology. They come out of this terrible situation with the stories handed down to them from their parents and their, let's say, X generations. They finally the weather gets better and they start to multiply and a little tribe builds up. Well, the story that they have of a boat that came from their great 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 whatever, 1,000 years before the cataclysm, well, they slowly start to build these things again. The emergence of language, the society, laws, all these things start to emerge again. And that's where we have this incredible connection with this megaliths and these dolmen. There are 35,000 megalithic structures in Europe, the majority of which are concentrated in southwestern Spain, where I live. The oldest dolmen in in Europe is next to my house.
Oh, wow.
So I theorized quite strongly with a great amount of evidence that when these survivors, that's why you have all these caves in southern Spain that are have been, these guys survive. The weather gets better. They start to come down to the coastline. They start to emerge again. They build up societies again. And I think that the megalithic, which is so, it's this archaeologist friend of mine, Anna, who specializes in dolmen, I'll say to her, Anna, who built this, like, really? And she'll say, do you know the truth is? We don't fucking know. we'll occasionally find a dolmen with a couple skeletons in it. So we date the skeletons. And let's say the skeletons are, you know, 6,500 years old. It doesn't mean that the dolmen is 6,500 years old. Yep. It just means that maybe these skeletons were buried there 1,000 years, 2,000, 3,000 after that dolmen was built. When I see dolmen, I think the first thing that strikes me is they're magnificent structures. But they'll have some, like Dolmen de Manga will have like these ceiling slabs that weigh 400 tons, you know? And so I get the impression that the people who built these megalithic structures were people who had the ancient knowledge of advanced engineering, but they knew about leveraging. They knew
they just
about
lacked the tools that they had from their old society. I follow you. Exactly. I follow.
They lacked industry, which is the only way you get to the little fine, you know?
All right. Well, that's interesting.
That's
a very interesting, interesting perspective. I had one person ask a question that basically they want me to ask you about the Straits of Hercules, which I think they mean the Straits of Gibraltar or the Pillars of Hercules. They called you Mikey as well. So
yeah, that's how I grew up being called Mikey.
It's Mikey. He likes it.
It's Mikey. But the way, if my camera goes dark, I'll stand up and I'll pop a new battery in it.
All right, no worries. I've only got about another 12 minutes or so. I need to get out of here a little earlier than I was hoping, but
no worries.
Yes, but yeah, this is. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of your stuff. But I should let you weigh in really quick because I don't think that viewer heard what you were talking about the Straits of Gibraltar a minute ago. So.
So what was their question on the Straits?
They just wanted to ask you just to basically have you weigh in on it.
Here's what's really interesting. So the Straits of Heracles, now known as the Straits of Gibraltar, as we said earlier, any ship coming in had to stop there, pay their dues, or a frickin' god. You were like the richest dude. And I think that's when they talk about Zeus, Poseidon, and that family of gods of the Greek pantheon. I think in reality, they're talking about extremely powerful, wealthy families. And as mythology says, Zeus controlled from his perch up on Mount Olympus in Greece, while his brother Poseidon controlled the waterways. That's why he was the god of the water and whatnot. In the Straits of Heracles. Now, I want to add a quick interesting thing. The Straits of Heracles, or Hercules, same. He actually makes a very interesting point. He says when you exit through the Straits, you would have to pass through the Pillars of Heracles. Now, here's another interesting thing that we point out. Throughout all of history, people have always assumed that the Straits of Heracles or the pillars, there's a difference between the pillars, actual columns. They've always assumed that the Pillars of Heracles were just the name given to the, because I can see the Atlas Mountains from my house. That's another thing. He said it was in view. You could see the Atlas Mountains. So you would, most people have always attributed, as did I. I always attributed north of Africa, Tangiers, and Gibraltar as being these two pillars of Heracles. But here's an interesting fucking thing. Plato writes this 2,400 years ago. And in between the city of Cadiz, because Cadiz, capital city of Cadiz, is still actually on its own island. it was prehistoric, then it was Phoenician, then it was the Arabs, the Romans were there, then the Arabs were there for a long time, and it's had an incredible history. It has this land bridge that connects it to the next town just down the road. It's called San Fernando, right? Now, you look at, I have about 7 or 10 ancient maps of Cadiz, and you can see two points that say pit columns of Hercules, columna de Hercules, columnas de Heracles, right? And when we pointed our satellites to these rough location of these ancient maps, we saw that there were two circular formations in the right where you now see the freeway joining the city of San Fernando to the city of Cadiz. We see that there are these two circular marks right where these ancient maps said columns of Heracles, right? Here's where I'm going with this. We went and investigated. One of the circular marks you can just see is like the remains of something very ancient in the mud, but almost nothing. It's like a stain. The other one is a military base, and it's been built on top of, and it's called Torre Gorda. And you can look it up on Google Maps, right? Torre Gorda, with my friends in the military, that tower, which you're not allowed to film, so I had to film it like my own ways. That tower, which is currently military, is built on a prehistoric tower, which was called the Column of Hercules. So I have a different theory. Now think about it. Those two structures are just at the entrance of the straits. I think that the straits are one thing, but I also believe that when Plato wrote this, those two structures still existed. And I think he was telling you, hey, you know, as a Greek, imagine 2,400 years ago, hey, you know, when you cross outside of the straits, you get to the columns of Heracles, which I'm assuming if you were going in a boat, because it was like the highways of the ancient world were boats, you bring all your merchandise from across the Mediterranean, you had to go through those, pay your dues, and off you went. So it's really fascinating. I hope that answers a little bit for the viewer that asked the question.
There's a question from old. I hope that does too. It's a pretty intricate answer. A question from old saggy guy who gave out all the channel memberships a little bit ago. Do you think there's a connection between the Basquez and Atlantis, or
yes,
how you pronounce that?
The Basque country is absolutely fascinating. So one of the fields of study, we cover everything. We cover everything from archaeology to sciences to scanning to diving to geology to etymology to to genealogy. And we've studied the migration of people over the course of time. And the Basque country is particularly curious. I get the impression that people went like this, they scattered, and you can tell that pattern now you only got about 7 minutes left, right? I gotta
tell you something
super fun, yeah, cool. So one interesting thing about this place is it seems like anybody who hasn't been here, it's absolutely gorgeous. And Sanlúcar de Barrameda in the province of Cádiz, where I live, has a palace. It's an ancient palace, one of the oldest aristocratic families in all of Europe. They are called the House of Medina Sidonia, right? Now, their archives are off limits to everybody. And they're the oldest archives. They're some of the oldest archives in Europe. I've been friends with the Duke right now, and I'm friends with the director of these archives, and they invited us to go in about a month ago, It was fucking mind blowing. So, for people who don't know this, Magellan and Christopher Columbus sailed out of here. Now, this is where it comes back to, I'm going to leave it at this, but this is where it comes back to the Americas, and this is where it comes back to the Azores and the Canary Islands. Although we know that the capital of this ancient Atlantic culture was here, as Plato said, they controlled everything all the way to Egypt and outside. When Plato mentions just outside of the straits in the region known as Gades, but not as far as going to the opposite end of the Atlantic to the boundless continent.
Yep.
So he knew about America. And in the 1400s, when Columbus and the Spaniards got to the Americas, the educated ones who had read Plato said, what the fuck? Plato knew about America.
Yep.
So when I went into the archives, I saw maps, I saw documents where Columbus in the 1400s and the Pinzon brothers, who were the navigators who sailed with him, they knew that there were underwater Atlantic currents, that to go to the Americas, you passed by the Canary Islands, and to return, you had to stop by the Azores. So when people say, do you think the Azores were part of this and the Canary Islands? Absolutely. Absolutely. All the proof points we have in Mesoamerica of cities that have Atlan in their etymology.
Yeah.
We know. I think that information was hidden, lost, whatever you want to call it. And when the time was right, off went Columbus with that information.
That's interesting. That's not an uncommon perspective. It seems for a lot of people, depending on where they're at. But I do have to get going soon. But I want to ask you, Michael. Yes. I've got a link to your channel down below. But where can people go to support you or to look you up in other places?
I'm trying to keep as busy and put up as much stuff as possible, because people have to see. I also try to show as much stuff, some of the other projects that we're working on. So our YouTube channel, we're on Instagram, Michael Donnellan Atlantica. I'm on TikTok, also Michael Donlan Atlantica. I've got a Facebook thing that I've had since I was, we've got ingeniofilms.com. We're doing a bunch of podcasts and staying busy. And that's where people can keep in touch. And I love the feedback we're getting. It's been absolutely brilliant. So
people are chomping at the bit to watch it. That's for sure. People are dying to see it. So
I'm not great at that many things, but I have to say the one thing I'm super fucking proud of is the work that we've done on this, and the world has to see it.
Yeah.
The world has to see this.
I completely agree. It was season one was amazing. What we saw at Cosmic Summit. Thank you so much for the people that have said that this was great and that enjoyed it. Really appreciate you guys coming out. Thanks, Michael,
for making
it. Sorry about the confusion yesterday for you and for my viewers. But
it's always a real pleasure talking to you. You're a gentleman and a scholar, and I've just, from the first time we met and every time we talk, I just can ramble on for hours. Thank you so much, brother.
Well, thank you. I don't think I've ever been called either one of those things before, but I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, Michael. You're one of the good ones, man.
Thanks,
thank you, everybody, so much. You guys have a good one.